and welcome to the Triathlon Coach Podcast. My name's Simon Ward and I'm your host for this weekly show where my goal is to share practical, usable advice from the best athletes, coaches and experts from the world of triathlon so that you can get the most from your training time and maximise your enjoyment of the triathlon lifestyle. If you don't already know me, I'm the founder of thetriathloncoach.com and the SWAT Inner Circle, and I've been a triathlon coach for over 20 years, working with absolute beginners right up to Olympic athletes and coaching them to race at distances from sprint through to Ironman. Reviews and ratings are the currency of podcasts, so if you enjoy today's conversation, I'd really appreciate it if you could drop into iTunes, Podbean or Stitcher and leave a rating and a review. And while you're there, please subscribe to our weekly episodes so that they can be downloaded straight into your phone or your iPad or wherever you choose to listen to them. And finally, to say thank you, I have a free gift for you. I've put together 25 of my top tips amassed from 30 years of racing and training and coaching in the sport. All you have to do is email triathlonsuccess to beth@thetriathloncoach.com and she'll send it right out to you. Okay, now it's time to crack on with today's guest. Welcome again, listeners. And today, Boxing Day, I am joined by Georgia Taylor Brown. Now, welcome to the show, Georgia.
Thank you very much.
Hope you had a good Christmas.
Yeah, it was great. Thank you.
Now, listeners, I would love to say that Georgia and I are sitting here in front of an open fire, drinking a cup of mulled wine with snow falling outside. But actually, it's a nice sunny day. Georgia's a little bit muddy and a little bit sweaty because she's been out riding, as you would expect from an elite athlete. Mm-hmm. Georgia. Elite athlete. Do you still have to shake your head and think about that now, you know, that you're doing what a lot of people dream of?
I think it is a weird feeling, and I just think how lucky I am to be in this position and be able to have the opportunities that I get. I guess we work hard to get here. We have to give up a lot. But we still are lucky to have this opportunity.
Yeah, and I've talked to a couple of your training colleagues from the Leeds Performance Centre. Sam Dickinson and Sian Rainsley, and both of them equally echoed your thoughts there about how lucky they are to do this. And I think that's quite a humble thought from a professional athlete, because not everybody feels like that, do they? Some people seem to think that they're in an exalted position and they need to be showered with gifts and given a crown to wear.
Yeah, I think a lot of athletes are in that position as well. They are looked after very well, but I think in triathlon, we are quite a close-knit family. We are quite humble, like you said. I think it's quite nice. We're just normal, down-to-earth people, I guess.
Well, and certainly in here in Leeds, mm-hmm. you know, lots of my friends who are triathletes, but not necessarily connected to any of the people. They don't really know any of the guys that train the performance centre. Say, oh, yeah, we're out cycling. Saw Johnny and Alistair, or we saw Jess Lee and Monthar in the cafe. Oh, they were really nice. We had a cup of tea and had a chat. I think that is the friendly atmosphere that that's been developed in the last few years at the Brownlee Centre and around the Leeds Centre, really.
Yeah, we are just normal people. We'll go out for a social bike ride. It's not hard all the time. It's not always train, train, train. We'll stop at a cafe, we'll have a bit of lunch, we'll have some coffee. Yeah, we just do normal stuff, but we are in a position where we are very lucky that we really do enjoy our job and it takes us to some amazing places.
Yeah, well, I mean, and you've had some particularly black times in your short triathlon career as well, haven't you? You know, when I first met you, I think you'd just come to training Leeds and then all of a sudden you were injured and you missed quite a lot of training time then, and I'd like to chat about that. Mm-hmm. And then obviously you had the incident before the Leeds WTS where you were just about to get onto the big stage the first time and you twisted your ankle the night before doing a warm-up run. So you've had some hard moments as well.
Yeah, definitely. And that's just part and parcel of sport, isn't it? That's what happens. We have the good times, but then there are the rubbish times as well. But I think that's what makes you as an athlete.
Yeah, they are, but it doesn't make them any easier to swallow, does it?
No, you know? It doesn't. But I've had quite a few injuries now. The first ones, it's not great. You don't know how to cope with it. Like, your whole life is sport, so when that's taken away, you're not even sure what to do. But over time, I think I've realised actually injury's not as bad as people may seem to think it is, because it's actually made me know more about my body, and I know my limits. I know when I can push on, when I maybe need to pull back. It's not all negative about injuries, but it's also not positive, but you can try and see a fun side to it.
I remember reading Sebastian Coe, so, you know, probably 30 years ago when he was in his prime, talking about injury and saying, actually, you know, people might think injury is a bad thing, but for athletes, it's actually can be a good thing. It can, if you're able to delve back into your training diary or think about your training, you can see where things have gone wrong. So it helps you to avoid that. Mm-hmm. It gives you a bit of headspace. Sometimes you need a bit of time away from track, away from all of that stuff. Allows you to maybe reconnect with friends a little bit because you're not training all the time. And sometimes it just gives your body a chance to breathe.
Yeah.
From that sort of, because it's quite a monotonous and relentless routine, isn't it, for you?
Yeah, and obviously some days are harder than others, and you never know. Like, some days I wake up and I'm positive and ready to train, but then other days you're like, oh, I don't really want to go out today. It is rewarding, like you said, injuries, they're not great, but then you learn a lot from them.
Well, let's go back then. Right to the start. So how did your athletic career begin? Can you remember that far back?
Yeah, well, I've been swimming since I was about 4 or 5. And then I started running only in high school, really, through when I was in year 9, so maybe 14, 15, through school's cross country. And I did quite well and was sort of moving up the rankings, got through to English schools, did really well there, made the England teams. But I was still enjoying my swimming. So swimming about 18 hours a week, and I was only running maybe once or twice a week, not much at all. But I was doing well in both, and I didn't really want to give up either of them. But I couldn't, with school, I couldn't balance it all. So then mum basically signed me up to the British Triathlon Talent Squad day. And so went along to that. Did the trials there. I think it was like a 800 swim and a 1500 run time trial. Did well, and then didn't think I was going to get on the squad because I'd never done a triathlon, and everyone there had done triathlons. And then they called me the next day and said that I was on. So I was really happy. And then basically from there, it was getting onto a road bike for the very first time, which was a bit daunting, and being clipped in. And there was a few falls, but I managed to get there. It took a few years.
I had this discussion with both Sam and Sian on the podcast I did with them, and Sian particularly came from a swimming and then a running background. Mm-hmm. I think she was English school's 1500 meter championship.
Yeah,
did you run against her? Because you're roughly the same age, aren't you?
I'm about 3 or 4 years old. Older, I think, than Sian. But yeah, she's a whippersnapper on the track.
but that. Going right back to the time when the talent program started in 2002, the model then was to find swimmers and runners. We weren't interested in cyclists.
No, yeah.
And on the basis that, you know, you needed the aerobic capacity that swimming gives you from a young age. And so that sort of the fact that you can train through those growth years without putting too much stress on the body, too much impact on the bones. You get the running skills. If you've got that sort of engine and that sort of and the technique from swimming, you can easily add in the running. And certainly Sian and yourself are examples of that. I know that Alistair and Johnny came from a swimming and running background, and so did most of the others that are now performing at the highest level. So it's a model that still holds true to this day. And I think they're still using that as the talent ID program, aren't they?
Swim and run. Yeah, I think it was basically you put your 800 swim time and your 1500 run time into some system, and it gave you a number.
Yeah, and then there's different levels into like silver and gold. Yeah,
if your number was high enough, you could go along to the talent day. There was quite a few of us there, and then I got onto the squad, and then I went to a few different camps, and that's where it all started, really.
Okay, so you're not from Leeds originally, are you?
No.
You're from the other side of the Pennines, Red Rose side, Lancashire.
Yeah.
So how come you ended up over here then?
Through university. So I have been in Leeds for just over 6 years now. So I started university in 2012 and did 3 years there, sports science course, and then now I've been full-time athlete for 3 years. I really liked Leeds, and I knew a lot of people here and had friends here, so it drew me towards Leeds more than somewhere like Loughborough. Loughborough wasn't for me.
Who were your friends, triathletes as well, or just people who were studying at the university?
Yeah, I was really good friends with Heather Sellers.
Okay.
Yeah. So she was here, and I love spending time with Heather. I spent a lot of time with her before I came to uni, and would come and spend time with her over the weekends in Leeds while I was going through sixth form still. So that sort of drew me towards Leeds.
What was it like getting to the performance centre? So if you've been in Leeds 6 years, that would have been 2012. So did mm-hmm. you come just at the time? Well, you'd have come just after Alistair and Johnny had won their medals, just after the euphoria of London Olympics. So that must have been a fantastic time to come, because, I mean, they made a massive thing about Yorkshire, how successful it was at the 2012 Games, and how Leeds had, you know, half a dozen goalpost boxes scattered around the place amongst the para-athletes and the other athletes that were there. So what was the atmosphere like at the performance centre then?
Well, I was quite scared at first, because I was just this little junior coming along, and obviously there's all these like mega superstars around you, and it was a bit scary. But I think obviously it's incredible training with all those Olympians, world champs, Olympic medalists. But you just don't think about it. Like at first it was a bit amazing. Like, oh my God, I'm training with these people. But yeah, now I guess we're just all there together. And then when you stop to think about it, you're like, wow, this is pretty incredible that I get to train alongside these people. But yeah, it was quite scary at first, but I fit quite in quite quickly, because I had already been coming up to Leeds to do a little bit of training. So I already knew people, and I knew bike routes, and I'd been working with the team already. So, it was quite easy to jump straight into the squad.
Did you used to have a coach then when you were over in Manchester?
I was with Manchester Aquatic Swim Team. So I was coached swimming there, and then running I was with Sale Harriers, so I had a separate running coach. And then riding, I did use one of the British Triathlon coaches for my riding.
Okay.
So it was all sort of separate disciplines going on.
That make it quite difficult, because clearly your swim coach would want you to be doing a little bit more swimming, and your run coach would be saying, yeah, if only you dropped the swimming and did a bit more running. And then your cycle coach would be saying, look, you need to do lots of cycling now to get up to speed. So did you find a bit of conflict?
To be honest, no. They were all really understanding about it, which I think that's quite unusual to find, because if you're in a swim squad, usually they're like, right, well, you just swim in, and they don't like you doing other things. But they were actually really understanding, and it all worked out well. I was quite lucky to have that. I think some people might struggle with it, but no, it all worked out quite well, and they were all.
And when you got to Leeds then, was it Liam you worked with, Liam O'Neill?
No, it wasn't actually. So it was Jack Maitland that I originally worked with, and I was still under my running coach from back at home. So I was doing my own sessions under Malcolm Brown's supervision, but they were my sessions from my coach at home, Paul Roden. I left him after a few years.
So you got to Leeds, mm-hmm. you had quite a long time out, didn't you? Probably around the age of 18.
I think I was 20.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, when I had the time out. 19, 20. It was when I was in my final year of university that I got my injury. Yeah.
Okay, so what was the background to that, and then what injury did you get?
So I got a navicular stress fracture, and it was in May of 2014.
So just for those listeners who don't understand,
navicular is the big bone in your foot, sort of near your ankle joint. It's quite a big bone, but it doesn't have a good blood supply to it, so it doesn't heal well at all. So it's not a great bone to fracture. So I got that in the May of 2014, just before I was about to do my first World Series race, actually, in London, in Hyde Park.
Okay.
And I think it was 2 weeks before the race in London that I found out I got this injury. And obviously at first you don't, because I was going really well at that point, and I had just won National Cross. I had run a really quick time over 10K at Ribble Valley. So I was really ready and really excited for the season. And then obviously I got this opportunity to get a start at a World Series, like still so young. Mm. And then the doctor called me and said I had this, because for about 6 weeks I had a bit of pain in my foot. And then I had it scanned, and the doctor called me a few hours later and said you've got, well, text me actually first and said that I had this stress fracture, but it didn't sink in at first. And I was actually on my way out to go shopping in the city centre with Heath, and then I read it and was like, oh, right. I thought, oh, let's go shopping, Heath. And then we got in the car 2 minutes into the journey and I just burst into tears, and I was like, actually, Heather, I was like, I've got a stress fracture. What am I doing? I don't know what. Like, it just didn't sink in at first. And then I just burst into tears. I was like, we need to go home now. And so we went home, and I called the doctor, and then he explained everything to me. And Heather took me into town, and we got a pick and mix. And then we had a little wander around.
Oh,
and
you
then,
can always solve a problem with a pick and mix.
Yeah. And then we had a little wander around and got home, and it sort of all sank in. And then obviously after that, I had appointments with the doctors and people to try and figure out what we were going to do. But yeah, it wasn't simple. We didn't want to operate at first, because I saw a specialist, and you don't really want to operate. So we let it rested it for 6 weeks in a boot and didn't do anything. And then it's actually got worse in those 6 weeks. So it went from a third of the way through of my bone to two thirds. So it got worse, which I couldn't believe, because I hadn't done anything. So then we saw the specialist again, and he said that the only thing we can do is operate, really, because at that point, well, it was like you might not, even if we operate, it might not work out. Like, you need to be ready for that. So that wasn't great to hear, but I just, like, when I found out that I had the stress fracture, I just didn't think about it, and it just didn't sink in. But obviously it all worked out and it's fine. But yeah, it was a very long process from there.
So, I mean, that wasn't your only problem, was it? Because there were other subsequent little things, I think.
Yeah. So I had the operation, and so that was 6 weeks in cast, 6 weeks in boot. Came out of the
We must have been towards the end of the summer now.
Yeah.
So that's a season gone in a burgeoning career.
Yeah.
That's a season gone. And you must see your competitors then getting further ahead of you and feel like you're never going to catch them up.
Yeah. That's exactly how it felt. But also at the same time, the thing that got me through it was watching all the other girls and the guys competing and doing so well.
Because 2013 would have been when Non, who you would have been training with in Leeds, Non would have won the world title then, wouldn't she?
She won world champs, yeah. And in 2014, when I got the injury, Non was actually injured at the same time as me.
Yeah.
So we were together, and we helped each other through it. And she actually got a navicular injury as well. It was weird. It was like everyone was just
Vicky,
injured.
I mean, Vicky had a problem as well, didn't she? I think didn't Non and Vicky both have plantar fascia issues?
Yeah, that would have been that year. There was a lot of us out that year. I think Helen ended up getting something at the end of the year.
Well, Helen had something finishing 2012, didn't she, in London?
Yeah.
That sort of, you know, something to do with her hamstring or her mm-hmm. knee that sort of, you know, just put a bit of a press on her.
Yeah,
I think
that year we joked, because we were all in boots that year. We all had a boot,
well,
and
I think
it was passed around.
I mean, we've got a boot here. I think I wore one the year before when I... Maybe I was the starter of this virus.
Yeah, well...
But I think nearly every household in Leeds has got a triathlete. It's got one of those grey inflator boots.
Mm-hmm. When I was over all my injuries and everything was fine and clear, I got rid of everything. Boots, crutches, out the house.
Oh, don't worry.
I'm not having
don't
them.
Don't worry, Georgia. If you ever need one, we've got two in the loft.
Yeah, I don't want to go near them again.
No.
But yeah, so I came out of the boot after the 6 weeks in cast, 6 weeks in boot, and then I came out and started walking again. I was allowed to do a proper walk on Christmas Day, actually, in 2014.
And, let's just stop there then. So you've been since, so you got this diagnosis in May.
Yeah.
Were you able to do any swimming then or cycling? I guess if your foot's in a boot, you can't do anything because you need to immobilise the ankle.
Yeah. So in May, when I first got the injury, I was allowed to do a little bit of swimming. Because I had the boot on, but I was still allowed to swim and just do pull and not push off the wall, just push off with one leg, which is frustrating. And then obviously when I had the operation, I was in cast, I couldn't swim, I couldn't do anything. We actually did a bit of boxing in the gym, which was quite fun. And it just meant I was doing something that kept me a bit active because it does kill you. But I did have my dissertation to do at that point, so I was busy as well, so it was kind of a blessing in disguise because it meant I could focus on uni and get that done. Then when I came out the cast, I could start introducing swimming, but it was still maybe another 3 or 4 weeks until I could swim again after the cast, because when I came out the cast, my foot was, it was just so weak and I couldn't do anything, so it took a while. I started walking for about 5 weeks, just with both my shoes on normal. I was allowed to up my steps each day. I had to wear a stepometer thing. And then I got a bit of pain in my foot and then got it scanned and I had a stress fracture in my fourth met.
Same foot.
Because basically been offloaded for so long, and when you don't load bone, it just starts to break down again. So my foot was just a bit of a mess, and I got that, and then it was back in the boot for 6 weeks again and crutches.
Wow. So, but I mean, you're quite young, so yeah. You know, was there any reason? Is there a hereditary thing, or is it nutrition or diet?
I think at that point it probably was, nutrition, diet. I was quite lean at that point.
Right.
And it was, for me, I think that why it happened is because I was doing uni and I was trying to train almost full time because I was going into the next age group and I was becoming a senior. Well, I was an under 23, but I was going to be racing with the seniors now. And I probably upped my training a bit, and I wasn't fueling enough. I wasn't resting enough because I was trying to cram my sessions in between uni, and it just didn't work out. Like I just didn't get it right. I did not get my recovery right. But obviously, like I said before, you learn a lot from injury, and I know now that the most important thing for me is recovery, because there's no point in doing all the training if you're not letting your body adapt to it.
Yeah.
So I'm quite sensible now. If I'm not feeling great, if I am tired, then I'll either back off that day and do less, or I just won't train. It's definitely changed the way I think about it, and I've come better from it.
There's an interesting discussion I had with another athlete come coach about this idea of only ever giving sessions 95%, so you don't leave yourself short for tomorrow. So committing to doing a block of training and making sure you get to every session versus trying to do that hero session and then leaving yourself in a depleted state for 2 days and having to stay in bed or the equivalent of.
Yeah.
And so I don't know your training volume, what, 25 hours a week maybe?
25 is probably max that I'll do.
Right.
But the thing is with me, I think I've progressed quite quickly and done well is because I am really consistent in my training. I'm not a high mileage athlete. I just can't physically take those miles. I can't run much. I run 4 times a week, but I'm consistent. So I am consistently doing the same every week. And I'm giving, as long as I do my two key run sessions on a Tuesday and a Saturday, and I do give those my best efforts, then anything around that is a bonus, really.
But equally, in order to give yourself those best efforts, you make sure you don't give too much on the other one. So if you're out on a group ride on a Friday and you see somebody that you know that you're better than going past you, you have that intensity discipline to go, well, do you know what? I have to run hard tomorrow. They may not. So I'm just going to sit here. I'm not going to try and chase them down, you know, because it's not about racing today. And you know, just about everybody that trains in Leeds knows that Tuesday track is important. So you don't drill yourself, you know, for 24 hours before. So again, you have intensity discipline to make sure you get to those sessions.
Yeah.
And still, you do just enough that's on the programme. You know, you probably run to a pace rather than just going all out unless it says all out.
Yeah.
So you don't, you know, if the coach, if Mitch or Malcolm had said, right, I want you to run these kilometres at 3:30 pace, there's no point in running them at 3:15 if 3:30 is going to give you what you need.
Yeah.
Because 3:15 doesn't give you any more.
Nope.
Except fatigue, which means then you can't turn up for swimming on a Wednesday morning.
Yeah, yeah.
So you have intensity, discipline, and you have consistency, but it's always measured and thought out.
Yes, yeah. And yeah, I know exactly, before the session, I know the pace that I need to hit. And obviously throughout the season you're getting fitter, so you're running faster. And there are sessions where I can push on and I can dig quite deep. But obviously then there is times where I know that, okay, maybe today I'm just going to run tempo, and I'm quite good at judging that and knowing my body. And I think I do have quite an athlete driven program. And obviously I work with Mitch now, Ian Mitchell, he's my run coach. And we have a good relationship, and it's quite open and honest. And I can say, look, Mitch, I'm not feeling great today. Like, can we back off a bit? And then that's fine with him. Like, that's absolutely fine. And then there's days where I want to push on. I do decide what I want to do. And I think that's what worked for me. But obviously everyone's different.
Well, that statement there comes out time and again, is everyone's different, and it's what works for me. Coaches need to understand that.
Mm-hmm.
You've got enough experience now to know what your body can take, and coach, then you need to work with your coach to find the ideal solution, don't you?
Yeah.
Let's go back then to that moment when you were able to walk.
Yeah.
Right, because we're talking about essentially a professional triathlete here who's now been given permission on Christmas Day to go for a walk. Now, I've talked with other athletes in your position who've been injured, who've said, do you know what? When you can't do stuff you love, sometimes just being able to do it, it doesn't matter whether you're going out for a time or to get out of breath, just being able to walk through the woods is a pleasure.
Yeah.
And I guess once you've experienced not being able to do it, going back to it is the pleasure. But do you always keep hold of that first pleasure, or once you get fitter, do you forget about that and it's all about performance?
No, I think maybe a bit of both. Like, it is about performance. Performance is what gets me out the door. That's what makes me work hard. Like, I'm always focused on racing and I want to do well. On Christmas Day, my first walk was, I think I was allowed to do 200 steps, which really isn't much. It's basically walking to the top of the stairs and back. Like, it's not much at all. And then after that, I had to use my crutches to get around. So I still had my crutches with me. But it was nice to be able to actually plant both feet on the floor and let my feet roll through. Like, you do take advantage of that because it's just something you do every day. But going from, I had like cast, boot, crutches, wheelchair, I had everything. So it was weird. I spent about 6 months of my life not really walking. It was nice to be able to just let my feet roll through again. I felt like if things were just moving forward then.
So from that first diagnosis, May 2013.
2014.
May 2014.
Yeah.
Then right through to Christmas and then New Year 2015, you're diagnosed with this stress fracture.
Yeah.
So then what happened then? Because that would have been another bit of time out. That's like you've made a little bit of progress. You've been able to walk, and then back in the boots, back to no running, back to no cycling, back to walking onto poolside in your boot, and doing tumble turns with no push off.
Yeah. Well, from there, I started to build up my swimming again, which was really hard. I felt sick every session because I was so unfit. Like, I'd had 6 to 8 months off. Really hadn't been doing very much because I could train a bit more, but I wasn't bothered because I knew I wasn't going to have a season and there was no point in pushing. I thought, I'm going to just spend this time with family and friends, do things that I won't usually be able to do. I started swimming again, and that I could swim, and that was the only thing I could do. And I could do a little bit of aqua jogging. And then I can't remember when it was that I started riding my bike. But I started riding my bike again, and I was allowed to do maybe 45 minutes the first time or something on the road. I'd started on the turbo before that. I think my first turbo session was maybe 10 minutes, and it was slow. I built up really slow, and the doctors and physios said, like, we are going to build up slow. We could go fast, but where I was in my career, I was still so young. There was no need to rush into it. And we knew that that 2015, I probably wasn't going to have a season again. Like, it just wasn't good. It wasn't going to happen for me. So yeah, we took things quite slow, and then I built back into things. I started doing aqua jogging. I started using the underwater treadmill, and we built that up to 45 minutes to an hour. And then I was a few weeks away from doing my first run outside, and I felt, it was in the summer, and I walked to the cafe in Headingley with my friends. And we had some food, we walked back home, and as I walked back home, my foot started to hurt, my left one, which was the navicular one. And it feels really tight. So I got back to the house and looked at my foot, and there was like, the side of it was like something poking out. And I thought, that doesn't look right, and it really hurts. So I thought, I'm going to have a little nap. So I had a nap for like an hour or two.
And see if it's all gone when I wake up.
Yeah, it's like, I'm just overreacting. Maybe I've just done too much, and I've done too much walking today. And I woke up, I was like, nope, it's still there. So I text the doctor, and turned out, we got it scanned, turned out one of the pins in my foot was started to come out of the bone. So it's forcing its way out, because, I mean, it'd been in there for maybe a year or just under, but your body can just reject things. It just started to make its way out. So I had to go back in for another operation, have that pin removed and a smaller one put in. So then I was in a little booty sort of cast.
Oh, more feminine one.
Yeah. So I was in a little cast for 2 weeks. So that obviously knocked me back again. But it wasn't too bad. I could jump into things near enough where I was at. But yeah, it was just another thing again. I thought, why is this happening to me? But yeah, and then from there, I did my first run maybe might have been around August of 2015.
Wow. So I had 18 months.
I think it was 16 months of no running or something. Wow. 16, 18 months of no running. It's a long time.
Yeah. Were you on funding all of this time?
Yeah, I was on funding. I was still getting funding from UK Sport, which I was actually really grateful for, because, well, it was just British Triathlon support as well, just having all of the doctors and the medical team. Mm. And obviously the biggest thing for me was strength conditioning program. I'd spent a lot of time in the gym, because I had to completely change the way my body was sort of designed, and I just had to get stronger. I just had to change my physique and everything, and just become a stronger athlete and more robust, so I could withstand the training. So I spent a lot of time doing that.
Still a big part of your program now, then, strength and conditioning?
Yeah, definitely.
Throughout the year?
Yeah, weights in the gym twice a week. Monday, Friday, we do gym sessions, and just all the little bits around it as well, just like the tiny calf conditioning stuff.
Because Pipes is your coach, yeah, is he still, yeah. has he done you a little home conditioning program template?
No, I don't actually. I do most of mine at the gym.
Okay.
But yeah, I spent a lot of time in the gym when I was injured, and then I was doing quite heavy weights, and obviously now I'm back into racing, the weights have come down a bit because I don't need to be doing as heavy. But it's, the gym is a massive part of my training, and that's what's made me so robust.
Do you do a lot of deadlifts then?
Yeah, I do a lot of deadlifts.
What do you deadlift? Put everybody to shame, George.
No, I don't do that much. We do about 60, 65 at the minute.
Yeah, but how much do you weigh?
About 55 kilos.
Right, so, okay, so guys out there that are listening to this, you need to be doing at least 110% of your body weight to be on a weight for weight comparison with Georgia.
Yeah, I think deadlifts is maybe my thing. What you should see, Non with her calf, she's got strong calves. Yeah. It's incredible the weights Non's lifting through those calves.
Yeah, well, she probably had to do a lot of that with all of her injuries
as well,
didn't she?
That's important for her. Yeah.
Wow. So when did you get back to racing then?
So my first race was in May of 2016. So it was actually, I think my first race was on my mum's birthday, and it was Cagliari in Italy. that my first race that I did, and that was a World Cup. It was a sprint distance, and my dad and my two sisters came to watch, actually. And so it was really nice. And I mean, it wasn't a great race. I did not do well at all, and the run was terrible. But at least I was racing, and it was a starting point, and I was just happy to cross the finish line in one piece. But yeah, it was crazy, because I went from knowing exactly what I needed to do when I was racing, and then I got there, I was like, God, there's so much I need to remember. There's so much in triathlon that I just need to remember. Like, I think it was a wetsuit swim, so it was wetsuit, and it was all stuff around that, your chips, and then just everything. I just had to keep running through it in my head. But it was really relaxed, and obviously I went in with... I'd the last time I raced was as a junior, and I went in to, I think it was London, when the World Champs was in London as a junior. And then obviously the next time I was racing was in 2016, so I hadn't raced since 2013.
It's almost like gone through a time warp of zooming straight through from juniors to seniors.
Yeah, it's like, oh God, I've gone from being a junior and doing like being at the front doing really well, and now I'm a senior and I'm at the back doing terrible. But it was a starting point, and I was, like I said, I was just happy to race, but I didn't race much that year because there was no point. I just needed to get a feel of it, I guess. I think I only raced four times that year. But I just, the biggest thing was me, for me, was just trying to get consistent training in.
But then 2017, we've got the WTS in Leeds.
Yeah.
And you get your big start on the stage there. How soon before the race did you find out that you were on the start list? Because it's not like you get a massive advance warning, is it?
I didn't think I was going to get a start, and I did. And I think it's about 30 days before that the start list comes out. So that's when you know. And I was obviously really excited. I was like, oh my God, I might get to race Leeds. I watched it last year and I get to race this year. And then you get on the start list, oh no, look at all the people that I'm around. I thought, oh God, I'm not ready for this at all. And obviously it's a home one as well, so you want to do well. And then...
I know I've been in this position and talking to other people, it's almost like, I'm so excited about this race, but I'm petrified. So if something happened to me now that gave me an excuse not to do it, I'd love that.
But actually,
I really want to race it. So I'd be devastated if something did happen.
Yeah.
So half of you doesn't want to race and wants an easy excuse. And
that
the other
is
half
exactly
of you,
how it was.
But then what happened?
Well, yeah. So like you said, I was exactly how you would think. I was really excited, but I thought, actually, if this race was cancelled, I really won't be bothered. But then you'll say, but I also do really want to race. But yeah, the day before, I went for a run the day before the race, because then I was moving into the hotel that night. So got up at home, did a run, 20 minutes. I basically did 10 minutes, did a few strides in the park, and then ran home. I was 100 meters from the house, and it was raining actually. And it was early morning. I probably just wasn't with it. I was thinking about the race, and I crossed over the road, went step up onto the pavement, and my ankle landed on like a branch, like a chunky branch, and it just twisted and just went. And I sort of just jumped in the air. I was like, it's okay, it's okay, it'll be fine. And then I tried to run it off and I just couldn't run. So I sat down on someone's wall in front of the house and just burst into tears. And I looked at my ankle and my sock, and it was already swelling. It was getting quite big. So I sat there for a minute and I had a little bit of a cry. And then I walked home, and within a few minutes, I took my sock off and my foot was just blue. And I thought, I don't think that's supposed to happen. I don't think that's good. And I sort of burst through the door, and I shouted Josh, my boyfriend, I shouted him down. He came running down the stairs, scrambling down. He's like, what's happened? What's happened? And I was like, I rolled my ankle. And he said, oh, it'd be fine. It'd be absolutely fine. And I thought, I don't think it will. And he had a look. He's like, oh, it's quite blue, actually. It's quite swollen. But I don't need to hear that right now. So yeah, we basically sent a picture of it to the physio, and she said, oh, that's not supposed to look like that. So I went to see her, spent that whole day.
Is that Emma?
Emma Deacon, yeah. Spent the whole day.
Down to earth, Emma.
Yeah. Well, yeah, she basically told me I had just screwed over my ankle. I was like, yep. I think that's the is that the technical term? But yeah, so I spent the whole day with her in the hotel basically icing it, elevating it every 10 minutes, switching it over. And then I saw her three times that day. She strapped it. She took it off again when I went to see her, looked at it, strapped it up again. And we basically said, right, we'll make the call the morning of the race. So I think 8 o'clock the morning of the race, I went in the room to see her. And I woke up that morning to get out of bed to walk to her room, and I couldn't move my foot. It was so stiff. Mm. And I thought, I don't think I'm racing today. And I sat on the physio bed in her room, and she's like, okay, what do you think? And I said, I don't think I'm going to be able to do it. And she's like, no, I don't think. I think that's the right choice. So, yeah, it was another setback. But I got to watch, and, like, we did amazing. And
that was the one where Jess and... Lucy,
yeah,
had that big break, didn't they, with and then got chased down by
Lucy didn't race that year, actually.
Was that the year before?
Yeah, Jess, I think, well, we tried team tactics that year.
Is that the one? None wasn't very well, was she, that
yeah,
year?
Yeah, yeah, but it was, yeah, it was amazing to watch them race still, and yeah, it was just, I was sat in the crowds in a boot again. But it was
so
fine.
Wait, hold on, but you'd thrown all the boots away,
yeah,
so you had to go and get another one.
I had an old manky one, and it was huge as well. It was didn't even fit my foot.
It would have probably been Alistair or Johnny's at some point, would it?
So I had that on for, I think that was only 2 or 3 weeks, and then I started running again after maybe 4 or 5 weeks. I didn't have too long off, and I still managed to get back into the season again after that.
Did you get a WTS start later in the year then?
I got a start for Hamburg, right, which I was adamant that I wanted to do it. And Malcolm at the time said, I don't think you're quite ready, because it wasn't that long after, like, I hadn't been training that much since I did my ankle in Leeds. So I probably wasn't ready, but I was like, no, I want this start. I missed the one in Leeds. I'm getting a World Series start. And so I did Hamburg, and I did terrible. I think I nearly came last. So it was a little bit tragic. My first World Series experience was a bit scarring. But at least I could only improve from that. And then I did get back into the season and went to Worlds and stuff. So, yeah, I did. It was all right in the end.
Yeah, but then 2018, that's like been a massive breakthrough for you, hasn't it?
Yeah, so it's been a bit of a crazy year. But I've just, like I said, that I've just been consistent in my training now. I've had a few years of consistent training. I've hit all my key sessions, and I think I've just done everything. I've done everything right for me. And it's just all panned out well. And yeah, obviously Leeds was the home race. I've finally going to start. I will start this race.
Did you wrap yourself up in cotton wool the day before?
Yeah, but I don't think I even ran the day before the race, because I wouldn't. I couldn't do it. I was like, no, I'm not running the day before the race. I don't need to. It's fine, Georgia. Just chill out. And so I was just happy that we rode down to Roundhay. I was like, right, I've made it here. Well, the first thing, I got up in the morning, I was like, right, I've placed my trainers into T2. That's sorted. That's further than I got last year. So I think we checked out of T2 with the girls. I was like, girls, I made it further than last year. And then we got to Rounders, like, that's even further than last year again. And then I got on the pontoon. I was like, right, this race is happening now. As long as I dive in that water, I don't care where I finish today. So, and then, yeah, obviously I finished second, and it was just incredible. Like, the crowds were amazing. All my family were there. So it was incredible. But I thought that was just lucky, that race. I got lucky.
Was that your first podium then on WTF?
Yeah, first podium. Yeah.
So
yeah.
You weren't that far behind Vicky, were you? You were running together for most of the run.
We were running together for parts of it. Yeah, and then she upped it. She's speedy.
When you're in that position, mm-hmm. you know, you're coming off the bike, you're getting out of transition quickly. Is there a moment, are you so focused on the race that you're just going through the process of getting your pacing right, out of transition, and, you know, making sure you're sticking with the leaders, but, and also getting a break on the girls behind you? Or do you have any moments where you're actually thinking, I'm actually here, I'm not supposed to be here? Do you get any moments of imposter syndrome?
Yes, definitely in that race. The bike, actually, I felt really good on, and I was quite happy to sit on the front and do the work, because, I mean, around the city centre, you're not really working hard. As long as you riding it technically well.
And it is pretty technical, you know. Some of those, just as you come off the hedgerow and go around some of the, down Greek Street, there's a couple of corners where you're cornering on drain grates.
Yeah,
and,
the
surface is a little uneven, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, I mean, you're riding groups, and I know you ride on some sketchy surfaces around, so I guess that helps you out.
Yeah.
Because some of the girls aren't particularly skillful, are they?
Well, that's what I thought. The safest place for us to be here is at the front, and you're not really working hard, because as long as you corner well, you're carrying your speed round the corners, you're actually not... you're not really exerting much. So, yeah, I just stayed at the front. It was the safest place to be, and it paid off. And then I just made sure that I was at the front when we came off the bike going into T2. And I think me and Sophie, we came out of T2 together, and I was in just behind Sophie at that point. And I sort of laughed. I was like, oh dear, I shouldn't be here. Oh, dear. I didn't know what... I'd never set out of... T2, like at the front of the race. My transitions are usually terrible. I was at the front of the race. I thought, oh no, what have I done? Everyone's going to come past me. This is so embarrassing. And I'm going to finish last. And then I just tried to relax. And then we got down the hill and got to the dead turn, turned around and thought, oh, they're not catching us. So I thought, okay, well, just relax, Georgia. Just run at this pace. Like, I was happy with that pace. It felt quite comfortable. I sort of just kept at the same pace, really, and it felt really comfortable, and it just felt a really good race. And I think the crowd probably got me through it, because I mean, it was painful, but yeah, it was amazing to have all my family there.
At what point did you think, you know, because you get that at the bottom of the hedgerow, you run down the hill and you've got to turn and come back up the hill.
Yeah.
So that's the one chance when you get to see your competitors. Mm-hmm. So you get to have a look, quick look in their eyes, see how hard they're working.
Yeah.
You probably don't get a chance to see how hard they're breathing, particularly with the crowds. But at what point did you allow yourself to think, actually, a podium's on here?
Not until I got on that blue carpet.
Oh, really?
If something's going to happen, someone's going to come past me. I'm not going to podium. I don't think I can do this. But I'm not very good at running downhill, so that's where I struggled a bit. But I'm definitely better running uphill. So I knew that if I worked hard uphill, then I could get a little advantage and work over the top of that hill.
It was Sarah True, wasn't it? It was just behind you?
Katie Spheres. Yeah, right. Katie. It was a fun race. And then obviously, yeah, the rest of the year, I got another podium in Edmonton. And then I decided I was going to race Montreal because I'd moved up the rankings. And then, going into the grand final, I was ranked third, which was crazy. But throughout the whole season, I didn't really feel any pressure. I thought, well, I'm just enjoying myself, and I can only do as well as I can do on the day. Like, there's nothing more I can do. So I don't really feel the pressure. I just sort of have fun with it and relax.
What's it like? Because, you know, you there's a lot of travelling, isn't there?
Mm-hmm.
Not just on training camps, but to various events, because you obviously had to go to Canada. So that's going east to west.
Yeah.
So that's hard on you coming back to the UK and getting back into training there. Then you had to go to Australia, so there's an awful lot of planning and time zone and climate change going into that.
Mm-hmm.
Does that affect you, all the travelling, like it does some people, or does it not really get to you?
No, not really, because I think around travelling we just make sure that obviously you're keeping on top of your hydration, obviously always with hand sanitizer and making sure that we're getting in our like probiotics and all of that and keeping on top of your immune system. And then you just reduce your training because it does take a lot out of your traveling. You wouldn't think it would because you just sat there on a plane, but it really does. As long as I reduce my training and just make sure I'm sharpening up into races, then I seem to cope with it. And it's fine. Like, there was a lot of traveling, but it was fine. Yeah.
So end of season, you have a rest.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Back into training now.
Yeah.
Two big years coming up because, of course, the Olympic points gathering process really kicks in 2019. You've got two selection races next year.
Yokohama and Tokyo Test Event. Yeah. So,
and that Tokyo Test Event isn't part of the World Triathlon Series.
No.
And yet, If you've got thoughts about going to the Olympics, you've really got to go and do that.
Yeah, we have to do it.
Right,
yeah,
so
yeah.
That's a real spanner in the works of your travel situation for World Triathlon Series. So bearing in mind that you came third last year, so yeah. You know, that was nice getting on the podium. You obviously get benefits financially from being up there, this prize money, but also sponsors take notice of you. So people start thinking, oh, well, you know, what does the future hold for Georgia? She could be on top of that podium next year, or she could get a second. So how do you plan your season around that? What's the priority for 2019? Is it bettering the World Triathlon Series, or is it Olympic selection?
Yeah, well, yeah, you have to decide, am I going to put all my efforts into the Olympic selection, or do I want to place well again in the World Series? And I think for me, it's, well, I think for most people, it's Olympics, isn't it? I think I can't do both, because I do need to put all my efforts into that Tokyo test event. I'm going to do my best to qualify for the Olympics. But yeah, like I said, you can only do what you can do on the day. But as long as I go into that race prepared, knowing I've done everything that I could possibly do, then there's nothing more I can do, and I can't be disappointed however I finish. I would like to do well in the series still, and I will do enough races to be able to get enough points to count overall in the series. But yeah, the biggest thing will be qualifying for the Olympics, because obviously that's a dream that a lot of sports people have as little kids.
So what's the World Series next year? Obviously, we've got Leeds.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
We've got Bermuda.
Yeah.
Will you be going to that one?
I'll do Bermuda, yeah.
So that's a big trip going west.
Yeah, yeah.
You've got to go to Yokohama. When's that?
That will be in March, April, May.
So that's before Bermuda.
No, after.
So you've got now. So you've gone west. Mm-hmm. Then you've come back to the UK. Mm-hmm. Then you've gone all the way over to the east.
Yeah.
And then you come back to the UK. You do Leeds.
Yeah.
Then what after that?
Then there'll be Hamburg.
So that's a sprint event.
Yeah. Well, there'll be Leeds, and then there's Nottingham.
Right. Relays.
So the relays. So it's if I get selected for then, Hamburg and the relays in Hamburg. Then there's Edmonton and Montreal.
Now, what about before Bermuda? Any races in the Southern Hemisphere?
There's Abu Dhabi is the first World Series, but I'm not sure if I'll do that one yet. I'm going to go...
Out of season, heat training, all of that other stuff.
Well, we're going away to South Africa for the whole of January, basically. So I think while I'm there, I'll decide, am I ready to race? Because right now, I'm not ready to race.
No.
But I'll decide when I'm out there, am I ready to race, and then sort of, yeah, go from there. And if I'm ready, then, yeah, you'll see me on the start line in Abu Dhabi. But if not, then you'll see me on the start line in Bermuda for sure. But, yeah, Bermuda was an amazing race. And it's a challenging course, but it's fun. I really enjoyed it. It was tough, but it was a good course. I will do most of the World Series next year. So it's going to be a busy year. And then obviously we finish up in Lausanne for the grand final.
That's not too bad. You can come after Tokyo, you can come back to Europe then, can't you?
Yes, I think we've got 3 weeks between the test event and then the grand final. So you've got some time to...
Right.
And then, maybe Super League again, because that was good fun.
Wow.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What do you think of Super League? Do you like the format?
Really, really enjoyed it. Yeah, it was amazing. It was just something different, and it's just fun the whole week.
Which one did you do?
I did Jersey.
Okay.
But obviously when we go to World Series, you don't spend much time with each other. And so it's actually nice to spend some time with the girls that you're racing against and actually just get to know them a bit more and chill out. And you're with them the whole week, whereas obviously when a World Series, we're dropping in and dropping out quite quickly. So it's actually nice to just get to know them. And I really enjoyed it. And I definitely do want to do Super League again next year.
I guess the problem is that, you know, the triathlon calendar, you talk about Abu Dhabi, that's what, February?
It's either end of February or beginning of March.
So the triathlon,
it's really early.
Triathlon season starting there.
Yeah.
You've got the World Series, you've got the Tokyo test event, you've got the Lausanne probably middle of September, then you've got the Super League at the end of that. It's a really long season, isn't it? And there's a danger that, whilst the prize money's good if you perform well, there's also a danger that in chasing that prize money, you're going to get burnt out, I suppose.
Yeah, I definitely don't think about the prize money. I'm just thinking about, well, my health and keeping fit and healthy and ready to perform at the next race. I don't want to go into a race tired, because what's the point? I'm not going to be able to perform my best, so I need to be fresh. So yeah, I've got to sort of decide like what races I can and can't do and what I'm going to get out of it.
You do. I mean, you see it in other sports, don't you? Like, look at tennis, you know, mm-hmm. the players are almost on it all year round. Yeah. Even I know snooker, you wouldn't put it in the same physical category as triathlon, but the players are expected to perform almost 12 months around now, mm-hmm. and complaining of burnout. So
yeah.
it's promoters and sponsors requirements as well, isn't it? And
yeah.
you know, I know of chatting to a couple of people, Malcolm included, about whether there's that slowly creeping into triathlon as well. And you know, triathlon's a demanding sport.
You know,
25 hours of training a week year round.
Yeah, we can't race that much, and some people do. But I prefer to train than to race all the time. I'd rather train and get fit, whereas people race and get fit that way. But yeah, it'll be an exciting year, and I am looking forward to it.
Wow. And I mean, in Leeds, you know, you've got Jess here, because Jess mm-hmm. has been performing really well.
Yeah.
You've got Lucy there, you've got Sam Dickinson just been accepted onto podium funding as well, hasn't mm-hmm. he? So this you've got Tom Bishop, you've still got Alistair and Johnny in Leeds, so there's a huge contingent of people here. Gordon Benson, of course, will mm-hmm. be hopefully fully fit next year after his shoulder op. So Alex Yee.
There's a lot of us. It's a really good group. Obviously we've just lost Non, she's gone away now. But I still see her at races, but it's sad that she's gone, but no, obviously we'll still see her around. And then Vic's left us last year or year before. But it's nice to be able to come together and see each other at races, and we're such a close group, and we're just good friends. Like, we're just in it because we just enjoy being around each other.
So, Georgia, a fantastic story. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. We've covered an awful lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of my listeners are recreational, age group triathletes. So here's an opportunity to share your knowledge and experience. It's going to be the new year in a few days, so mm-hmm. we're all going to start 2019 with renewed optimism and hope for a successful and injury-free season. So what would be your three tips for our age group triathletes that are listening? Some simple things that you've learned that you could share with them.
Well, the biggest thing, like I was banging on about it, consistency. That is the biggest thing for me. Recovery. So that's definitely a big thing. Consistency, number one. Recovery, number two. And the third one, just do it to enjoy it. If I wake up one morning and I think, oh, I really don't want to swim, I won't swim. Like, it's simple as that. I'm doing it because I enjoy it. I'm not just doing it for the sake of it. So it sounds cliche. Everyone says that, love what you do and enjoy it. But that's what makes you happy. And I think that's the biggest thing. So yeah, as long as you're consistent, you recover well, and you're enjoying it, then you're gonna succeed. So yeah, good luck to everyone for the 2019 season.
Thank you so much, Georgia.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
Happy New Year, listeners.
Yeah, Happy New Year. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was Georgia Taylor Brown. My name was Simon Ward. I've been your host today. Next week, we'll be back with another equally fantastic guest. But for now, enjoy the rest of your week. Enjoy your new year. That's a wrap for this week's episode. Thank you so much for listening to the conversation, and I hope you learned at least one thing. If this is the first time you've listened in, please go back and take a listen to some of our previous guests, and I can guarantee they will be just as good as the one you've just heard. If you've been a regular listener, then thank you for being a part of this journey with me so far. Finally, I'd like to take just a few seconds to tell you about my SWAT Inner Circle program. In the last few years, I spent an awful lot of time creating training programs and resources to help you train and race at whatever triathlon distance you choose, and for some of the events outside of triathlon like aquabike, duathlon and swim run events. As a SWAT member, you get access to all of these plans for 12 months of the year, and on top of that, we provide guidance on strength and conditioning, nutrition, plus a whole host of other supportive activities which help you to train, recover and race better. We also have a really friendly Facebook community. It's an exclusive Facebook page for SWAT members only, and there are over 150 of them already. If you join, you'll be able to get access to that page, and you'll be able to ask for help, and our members are all too happy to provide guidance and advice based on their experiences.
I'll also be there to help you find solutions to your training problems, and all you have to do is tag me in the Facebook page in one of your posts, or you can book a 15-minute phone call should you need one. If you'd like more information, or if you're ready to press the button and join the SWAT Inner Circle, just email beth@thetriathloncoach.com and she will send you all of the details. So that's all for this week. Hopefully I'll see you again next week, same time, same place, with a different guest.